Romans chapter 1. I really appreciated Bruce breaking the bread of life to us last week. It always is encouraging to me just to be able to gather around God's word with other people leading us. I really appreciate the thoughts that he offered. This evening, what I'd like to do is try to give you a framework for start preparing for the book of Romans. So a couple of weeks ago, I led you through a few thoughts related to Romans to try to get us ready for our study of this wonderful book in a couple of weeks. But this morning, what I'd like to do is just really focus in on the theme verses of Romans and try to show you why I think the best way to prepare for Romans is not by reading Romans, but by reading the book of Habakkuk. So as you begin the book of Romans, I think that it is pretty much universally agreed that the theme verse of Romans is Romans 1, 16 and 17. Don't forget verse 17. It's so sadly left out. Romans 1, 16 and 17. I have it up here. For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation for everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith for faith, as it is written, the righteous shall live by faith. So this is the theme verse, the thesis of the book of Romans. Couple of parts I would like to point out here. The key idea of the book of Romans is the righteousness of God. It's not the gospel, okay? That's a sub-theme. But the key theme of the book of Romans is the righteousness of God. As you read through the book of Romans, what Paul is really doing is explaining what the righteousness of God is. Those of y'all who went through the atonement study last week, I started to show you some ideas of, I think, what that means, and I'll expound upon that at the Blitz study. But it's all about the righteousness of God, far more than just being right with God, that term means. But also, you'll notice here, Paul writes, as it is written. This is a quotation taken from the book of Habakkuk, or Habakkuk, it's probably as it's said, but I'll do Habakkuk, because that's what I'm used to. Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 4. As it is written, the righteous shall live by faith. Notice what Paul's saying here. Verse 17, in the gospel, the righteousness of God is revealed, is demonstrated, is probably a better word. The righteousness of God is demonstrated from faith for faith. As it is written, the righteous shall live by faith. Why here does Paul quote from Habakkuk 2, verse 4? For a long time, I had just assumed, oh, Paul must like that little phrase, so he just cherry-picked it out of the book of Habakkuk, and that's just a nice little phrase to just knit together and put on a wall. So Paul just put it right here in the book of Romans. What I'm going to argue is, I have come to realize this is a very, very strategic, intentional, brilliant move on Paul's part. Because what Paul is doing in the book of Romans is showing a greater revelation of the book of Habakkuk. I'll show you why I believe that as we work through the lesson together. But let's begin by going through the book of Habakkuk. Again, you'll note here, Paul quotes from Habakkuk to say the righteousness of God is revealed from faith for faith, as it is written, the righteous shall live by faith. Why does Paul quote from the book of Habakkuk? What I'd like to do for probably about half of the sermon tonight is I'd like to just guide us through the book of Habakkuk. And then what I'm going to do is try to make some connections between Habakkuk and Romans and really show how Habakkuk is a critical starting point for understanding the book of Romans. Okay? So let's begin by going back to the book of Habakkuk. Okay? I'll give you a minute to find it. It's right after the book of Nahum. Okay? So it's in the Minor Prophets. Use your index if you need to find it. It's only three chapters. It's really small. But let's look back to Habakkuk. For a long time, I would have said Habakkuk was my favorite minor prophet. Matt would probably joke now it's Zechariah. Depending on the day, it could be Micah. But for a long time, Habakkuk was my favorite minor prophet. The book of Habakkuk is all about doubt. For me, quite personally, when I was going through a time in my life questioning, does God exist? Is the gospel true? Are the scriptures really authentic? Habakkuk was a book that helped me immensely because this is a book all about doubt. What Habakkuk is doing is wrestling with doubt. And he takes these to God, and there's a beautiful dialogue between God and Habakkuk, where Habakkuk is working through these questions and trying to figure out, how do you deal with this? The first dialogue comes in the first part of chapter 1. We're going to read just a few sections. I'm not going to read the whole book of Habakkuk. You can go home and read the whole thing in 15 to 20 minutes. But I want to read a few selections from Habakkuk to understand what's going on here. Begin with me in Habakkuk 1, verse 1. Habakkuk 1, 1. The oracle that Habakkuk the prophet saw. This is here Habakkuk speaking. O Lord, how long shall I cry for help and you will not hear? Or cry to you violence and you will not save? Why do you make me see iniquity and why do you idly look at wrong? Destruction and violence are before me. Strife and contention arise. So the law is paralyzed and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surrounds the righteous. So justice goes forth perverted. I will tell you all, I have read this passage and preached this passage I had no idea how many times. And it wasn't until I made this connection recently I understood what Habakkuk's all about. Habakkuk, most likely, is preaching after the fall of the northern kingdom to Assyria, but before the southern kingdom to Babylon. And he looks around at Jerusalem and he sees Jerusalem is encompassed in sin. And he wonders, how in the world can this people, who were meant to be the beacon of righteousness for the world, be so wicked? Sound like a question that any of us ask today? Problem of evil, problem of suffering? How could a good God allow so much evil and wickedness to go on? But if you notice verse 4, notice what he says. So the Torah is paralyzed. The Torah is paralyzed. That's very different from what Isaiah 2 says, which I quoted this morning. For the word of the Lord will go forth from Zion, Isaiah 2, 3, and 4. There, the word of the Lord, the Torah, is going to go out and accomplish its purpose. But here, the Torah is nothing more or less than a paralytic. It's doing nothing. It's paralyzed. And justice never goes forth. Now, y'all know this. The word justice is the same root word as what other word? Righteousness. You could equally put there, righteousness never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous, so righteousness goes forth perverted. Here's what Habakkuk asks God. God, why do you idly look at wrong? The problem of Habakkuk is the problem of unrighteousness. How can the Lord look at his people, Israel, and allow so much unrighteousness to just run rampant in Israel? God's going to respond, Habakkuk, I'm doing something about this. You just don't know. I'm raising up the Chaldeans. What? Read just a couple of verses here. Verse 5. Look among the nations and see, wonder and be astounded, God speaking. I am doing a work in your days that you would not believe if told. Behold, I am raising up the Chaldeans, that bitter and hasty nation who march through the breadth of the earth to seize dwellings not their own. They are dreaded and fearsome. Their justice, their righteousness, and dignity go forth from themselves. What is God saying? Oh, Habakkuk, I am doing something about this. I'm raising up the Chaldeans. That is the Babylonians. Okay? Allow me to put this in more geopolitical terms that we perhaps would understand. This would be like us looking, God, why are you allowing the United States to continue in such unrighteousness? Oh, Ryan, I'm doing something about it. I'm raising up North Korea. What? What? Okay, God, I know that we're bad, but we ain't that bad. And do you notice here in verse 7 how the Chaldeans are described? Their righteousness and dignity go forth from themselves, their justice and dignity. They're self-righteous. They're self-righteous. This is a people who are self-righteous that God is going to use to bring judgment on Israel. What? It makes no living sense. And that is why as you continue to the second dialogue, Habakkuk is going to ask God, well then God, why do you idly look at traitors? The question that he asked back in chapter 1, verse 2, is God, why do you idly look at violence? Now he's going to ask the question, why do you idly look at traitors? 1:12. Are you not from everlasting, O Lord, my God, my Holy One? We shall not die. O Lord, you have ordained them as a judgment, and you, our rock, have established them for reproof. You who are of pure eyes to see evil and cannot look at wrong, why do you idly look at traitors and remain silent when the wicked swallows up the man more righteous than he? Here's the question. How can God solve unrighteousness by piling on greater unrighteousness. Doesn't make sense, does it? How can God solve the problem of injustice by using a people who are not just? God responds, we're going to read this whole thing. Chapter 2, verse 2. The Lord answered me. Write the vision. Make it plain on tablets, so he may run who reads it. For still the vision awaits its appointed time. It hastens to the end. It will not lie. If it seems slow, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. Behold, his soul is puffed up. It is not upright within him. But the righteous shall live by his faith. Moreover, wine is a traitor, an arrogant man who is never at rest. His greed is as wide as Sheol, like death he never has enough. He gathers for himself all nations and collects as his own all peoples. Habakkuk asked the question of God, God, how can you let Judah continue in such unrighteousness? God says, oh, don't worry, I'm going to fix the problem. I'm going to raise up the Chaldeans. But this is a situation where Habakkuk goes before God and says, God, how can you idly look at Chaldeans? God responds, live by faith, Habakkuk. Live by faith. What he's doing here in verse 5, wine is a traitor, an arrogant man who is never at rest. What he's there saying is, don't trust in yourself. You could be deceived. Habakkuk, here's what you need to do. Verse 3, the vision awaits its appointed time. It hastens to the end. It will not lie. If it seems slow, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. Here's what he's saying. Habakkuk, I'm not going to give you the reason right now. I'm not going to tell you why not right now. You do not need the answer. You need faith. You need faith. This is why the book of Habakkuk is so personal to me. There are some questions we pose. There are very clear answers for it that God has given. We can look at dilemmas and questions in life, and there are some things that I think we can know. Can I trust the Bible? Does God exist? It's going to take some wrestling and some spiritual discipline, but I think there are some answers we can reach. There's other questions we pose. God has given us an answer. He says, live by faith. Why does this person have to suffer in this particular way? Why does this tragedy have to occur in this specific situation? It's not for you to know, Ryan. The righteous shall live by his faith. And here's what's astounding about this. Habakkuk has been dealing with unrighteous people. Judah is unrighteous. The Chaldeans are unrighteous. The only righteous man in this whole narrative is Habakkuk, because he lives by faith. What the book is going to do from there is God is then going to say, listen, Habakkuk, understand, I am going to judge the Chaldeans at some point. As you work through the rest of chapter 2, some wonder whether this is Habakkuk speaking or whether the Lord is speaking. I don't think it makes a great deal of difference. In either case, this is an oracle from the Lord delivered by Habakkuk about judgment on the Chaldeans. A couple of verses here that you'll probably recognize. Go down to verse 12, chapter 2, 12. Woe to him who builds a town with blood and founds a city on iniquity. Behold, it is not from Yahweh of hosts that people labor merely for fire, and nations weary for themselves for nothing. For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Isaiah says something very similar. This is from Habakkuk. If you'll go down to chapter 2, verse 18. What profit is an idol when its maker has shaped it? A metal image, a teacher of lies, for its maker trusts in his own creation when he makes a speechless idol. Woe to him who says to a wooden thing, awake, to a silent stone, arise. Can this teach? Behold, it is overlaid with gold and silver, and there is no breath at all in it. But the Lord of hosts is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. Sound familiar, Kirby? That's where that song comes from. We sang it this morning. Kirby and I must have had like a brainwave last night. Pray for one of us, I guess. The Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. Here's what Habakkuk does at the end of this judgment. Yes, I know the Chaldeans are terrible. I know they're unrighteous. I know they're unjust. I'm going to make them pay. They eventually will answer for my wrath. As you go into chapter 3 then, Habakkuk's going to have a response. There's two sections to it. The first one, he says, you've gone out for the salvation of your people. He talks about the past of what God has done. And he ends the book by saying, so therefore I will take joy in the God of my salvation. Make this your PM devotional before you go to bed tonight. If you don't read the rest of Habakkuk, please read Habakkuk 3. It is one of the most beautiful praises anywhere in the Bible. Because this is a man who has wrestled with doubt, with faith, with the justice, with the righteousness of God. And he says, this is my conclusion. He says, beginning in chapter 3, 1, a prayer of Habakkuk the prophet, according to Shigniath. We really have no idea what that word means, by the way. O Lord, I have heard the report of you, and your work, O Lord, do I fear. In the midst of years, revive it. In the midst of years, make it known. In wrath, remember mercy. For those of you who are already reading through Romans 9, does that sound familiar? Okay? This is an exact phrase that Paul will pick up on in Romans 9. God came from Teman, the Holy One from Mount Paran. This is talking about a Sinai. God came down and he spoke to his people. His splendor covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise. His brightness was like the light. Rays flashed from his hand, and there he veiled his power. Verse 12. You marched through the earth in fury. You threshed the nations in anger. You went out for the salvation of your people, for the salvation of your anointed. You crushed the head of the house of the wicked, laying him bare from thigh to neck. You pierced with his arrows the heads of the warriors. You came like a whirlwind to scatter me, rejoicing as if to devour the poor in secret. You trampled the sea with your horses, the surging of mighty waters. What is he saying? God, you have been just. If I think back on the history of my people, you have been a righteous, just God. This is what I think is so fascinating about it. Habakkuk, in the midst of his suffering, is overwhelmed by his current situation. When God finally tells him, Habakkuk, live by faith, Habakkuk reflects on what he already knew. And he's like, you know what? I knew within my heart of hearts that you were a righteous God. I knew that you were a just God. I just had to remember it. And I have found with times of doubt and suffering and trial that is so often true. If we're able to take ourselves out of our current circumstance and reflect on our earlier life and our earlier knowledge of God, we have always known that our God has been a live, a just, a righteous God. So Habakkuk ends by saying, verse 16, I hear and my body trembles. My lips quiver at the sound. Rottenness enters my bones. My legs tremble beneath me. Yet I will quietly wait for the day of trouble to come upon the people who invade us. Though the fig tree should not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, the produce of the olive fail, the fields yield no food, the flock be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls. I read that quickly, but you know what all that's saying? If there is no physical blessing at all left anywhere in any of Israel, I will rejoice in the Lord. I will take joy in the God of my salvation. God the Lord is my strength. He makes my feet like the deer's. He makes me tread on my high places to the choir master with stringed instruments. Habakkuk ends by praising God. Now, I want to ask the question then. Why did Paul quote from Habakkuk? Why did Paul quote from Habakkuk? Yes, there's this phrase that he loves. Some have actually said this was probably Paul's favorite verse of the whole Old Testament. He uses it many times in his writings. At very important critical points, Galatians 3, 11 and 12 is another example. The righteous shall live by faith. Well, I'd like to offer you three reasons that I think Paul is wanting us to remember Habakkuk as we read through Romans. Number one, the righteousness of God. Before I continue, let me just say this. The book of Romans is solid meat. There's no way around it. Y'all know I've talked sometimes about, you know, there's certain parts of Scripture that are like a glass of milk. There's other parts that are like a 6-inch fillet. This is a fillet, okay? And it has to be eaten as such. A glass of milk will keep you satisfied for a couple hours. A good old 12-ounce sirloin or fillet is going to keep you satisfied for a good while, right? That's how Romans is meant to be digested. It's solid food. So read it and eat it and treat it as solid food, okay? What I'm going to try to give you is a knife and a fork so that as you continue trying to go through and eat this book, you're able to go through and figure out where to slice. You know a steak slices against the grain. Everybody knows that, right? Okay, it's more tender. If not, there's your sermon for the day. Slice against the grain. It's always more tender. I'm going to try to teach you to slice against the grain when it comes to Romans. While it is solid food, it's very digestible. This is not a great, by far, in my studies of the book of Romans, the best book that I have read on Romans so far from a sermon standpoint, argued that Romans is so often read as a great theological argument of the gospel, right? And that's how Romans is often treated, as a great theological argument of the gospel. That's not what Romans is. Romans is a personal letter written by Paul to ask a church to enter into fellowship with him. So there's a lot of things in here that are very deep and very thick, but also understand this is a book that's meant to be understood by everyone, okay? Here's the first reason, though, that I think Paul quotes from the beginning, from Habakkuk. Both Habakkuk and Romans are all about the righteousness of God. I urge you, as you keep reading through Romans, I know some of you have said you're trying to write out Romans 9 through 11. Others of you said you're just trying to read through Romans as many times as you can. Others of you have said you're taking notes. I'm so excited to hear all these things. Here's a tip. At least once, read through Romans. Make a list of every verse that talks about the righteousness, the rightfulness, the justice, the justification, any of those ideas. See how many times Paul talks about that in the book. That's what Habakkuk's all about, right? We've already said Romans is about the righteousness of God. As you go through Habakkuk, we've already read these verses. Habakkuk 1:4, injustice goes forth. The law is paralyzed. Habakkuk is dealing with the problem of injustice, unrighteousness. Habakkuk 2:4, the righteous shall live by faith. What is the key quality of the righteous? Faith. It's no surprise then as you go through Romans. Romans is a book all about the justice of God. Go with me over to Romans 9 for a moment. Go over to Romans 9. That Romans 3:22 verse we worked through, some of y'all worked through with me last week. It shows us all about God's righteousness. In Romans 9:14, this is one of those situations, it's very easy to just skip over this verse, but it's a very important question that Paul raises. Romans 9:14, what shall we say then? Is there injustice on God's part? Who asks if God is idly looking at injustice? Paul or Habakkuk? Trick question, right? Both. What Paul is doing in Romans 9 through 11 is he's dealing with the righteousness and the justice of God. He's looking at the current situation of God's people, especially the ethnic makeup, and he's asking, is there an injustice on God's part? The exact question that Habakkuk had to deal with is the question that Paul had to deal with. And y'all, this is something that really has become so much more precious to me. I guess it's because Habakkuk's been such a helpful book in my own life. Why do you think Paul loved Habakkuk? Because this is a man who's having to deal with, is God a righteous, just God? When Paul looked at his apostleship to bring in the unholy Gentiles, while his own blood refused to come to the Messiah, is God a just God? God said he's going to raise up the Chaldeans to judge Israel. God said he's going to use the Gentiles to judge the Jews. The exact question of Habakkuk is the exact question of Romans. How can God use an unholy Gentile people to judge his own people and be righteous? Number one, the righteousness of God. Point two, as I've just said, both books are all about this Jew-Gentile problem. At times, I think it's been taken for granted the second part of Romans 1:16, the gospel is the power of God to save to everyone who believes, to the Jew first, also to the Greek. Why does Paul here say to the Jew first and also to the Greek? Well, I think this is more than Paul just saying, yes, it's available to everybody. What Paul does in Romans is he deals with the Jew first and then with the Greek. As he deals with the sinfulness of all humanity, he first shows the sins of the Gentiles, and then he's going to say, oh, actually, you Jews aren't that much better. You're all sinners too. Whenever he deals with the salvation and the righteousness that have come to all people, he's going to show it first to the Gentiles, then to the Jews. Romans actually reverses this a little bit, and I'll show this more in the Blitz study. But both Habakkuk and Romans are all about the Jew-Gentile question. Again, think back to Habakkuk. Chapter 1, God is going to bring judgment on the Jews. Chapter 2, God is going to bring judgment to the Gentiles. Romans is the exact opposite. God is not bringing judgment, but salvation to both Jew and Gentile. What Paul is doing in Romans is somewhat reversing what Habakkuk did. Habakkuk said, judgment will come to all, Jew and Gentile. Paul says in Romans, salvation has come to all, Jew and Gentile. And I would urge you, this is another critical fork to get as you work through the book. Notice everything that is said about Jew, Gentile, okay? Romans 14 is an example, is a chapter that I'm sure many of y'all have heard many sermons about. Others of you probably haven't heard it, probably a good thing. Romans 14 is all about the strong and the weak brother. And there has been all types of conundrums and questions, who is the strong and who is the weak. If you go to the very end of the chapter, Paul spells it out. This is the Jew and the Gentile. Okay? The strong one's the Gentile, the weak one's the Jew. That whole chapter is about Jew-Gentile relationships, which of course have immense implication for us, but we have to understand the original context. What he's doing in chapters 1 through 3 is dealing with the sinfulness of all. 4 through 8 is the salvation of all. 9 through 11, we'll deal with what all that's about, but it's all about the Jew-Gentile divide, especially as you work through Romans 9 through 11. Pick that up. What does he say about the Jew? What does he say about the Gentile? And what does he say about their relationship to each other? What Habakkuk did, Paul does in Romans. Number three, both books are all about faith. Both books are all about faith. What does God tell Habakkuk? The righteous shall live by faith. This takes the two key ideas of the whole book of Romans, righteousness and faith, and ties them together within the context of a Jew-Gentile question. What Habakkuk then asks is, how? How, God, can you be righteous? He says, Habakkuk, it is not for you to know my ways. It is for you to live by faith in me. That is what Paul is going to urge in the book of Romans as well. The righteous lives by faith. So it's no wonder then, as you look over to Romans chapter 9, verse 32. Look to Romans 9, 32. I'm going to back up to verse 30 for a context here. What shall we say then? The Gentiles who did not pursue righteousness have attained it, that is a righteousness that is by faith. But that Israel, who pursued a law that would lead to righteousness, did not succeed in reaching the law. Why? Because they did not pursue it by faith, but as if it were based on works. They have stumbled over the stumbling stone, as it is written. Why did the Jews not obtain righteousness? Because they did not pursue it by faith. Now, what does it mean to pursue the Torah by faith versus by works? I'll deal with that in a lot more detail. But understand, that's the starting point. It is by understanding the starting point of righteousness is faith. And where did Paul learn that? From Habakkuk. So, brethren, I urge you, as you continue working through and preparing for Romans 9 through 11, read back through Habakkuk, or perhaps even just read Habakkuk for the first time. It's three chapters, and actually, it's one of the, how can I say this? It's one of the easier to understand of the minor prophets. It's not filled with great apocalyptic language like Zechariah. It's not filled with immense historical knowledge like Micah. It's a very straightforward book. There's, of course, some poetry in there that can be a bit confusing to understand. But this is the point that I want us to understand. Paul, in the book of Romans, is going to give his most exhaustive treatise on what is the righteousness of God, and quite practically demonstrate what that means for those of us who seek to live by faith. If we take the lesson from Habakkuk and try to understand how is our God just, how is our God righteous, and we ourselves ask what it means to live by faith, I think that's a great starting point for us as we continue into Romans together. That's all I have for you tonight. You can be getting out your songbooks. So, the invitation, of course, comes right from Habakkuk. Habakkuk is a book that, for me, in times of weakness, I often go to. Of doubt and uncertainty. Because what Habakkuk always reminds me is, I am not the first one to doubt God's righteousness. I am far from the first to doubt God's righteousness. That's what Paul is going to deal with extensively in Romans, is how God can be righteous. But Habakkuk shows us there are certain times when you just have to live by faith. Not every question we pose comes with a clear answer. There's times that God just says, wine's a mocker. Don't trust in yourself. Trust in me. Give me your allegiance, and you'll be righteous, and you'll live by it. I think this is a very important lesson for us to live by, brethren, as we need to live by faith. Darlene, your coming forward last week has been so encouraging to me and so many others here, because what you've shown us is you don't want to live by your own might, by your own wisdom. You want to live by faith. And as we've had a chance to talk to Darlene more over the last week, I have seen her heart come out in this. That she's so sincere and really wanting to live by faith. And her life is now a sermon for each of us to follow. Wanting to put our own wisdom and our own righteousness aside and wanting to live by faith, trusting and obeying what the Lord has said by His word. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation this evening, I should come forward as we stand and sing.